Hello and welcome to another episode of Don't Shit on the Bus. I'm your host, Adam Omakayas, tuning in all the way from Los Angeles, California, for episode number 67 with my good friend Bing. Well, his name's Ryan Bingham, but he goes by Bing, so it feels weird calling him anything other than that. Today we kind of have, let's call it an origin story. Got to talk to Bing about how he became a manager, which I think is a route that is very viable and realistic for some people getting into the music industry. You know, some people want to tour, some people want to be in a band. And managing is, I mean, if you listen to the Mike Mowry episode, you know what managing is. It is very much the person that holds everything together for a band. They kind of, you know, delegate who does what when they do it and oversee everything that happens with that artist project. I thought it was cool, however, to hear how Bing started at a day job, then interning, then working at a management company, and eventually working his way up to a manager. I mean, that is a very organic, natural progression that I think a lot of people could see themselves taking, and it's nice to hear from a manager what that path looks like. I've known Bing for a long time. I didn't always know him as a manager. He showed up on a tour once when I was with a band and was like, hey, I'm here. I'm doing VIP. And we're like, cool. And I hope Bing laughs during this interview. I know he laughs. He's got one of the best laughs ever. He's just a good vibe. And he's always just kind of made every place he existed a place he should be existing. I don't know how to explain that, but you never feel like Bing's out of place. He's just there. You're like, oh yeah, let's go. This guy's here. He's hanging now. That's cool. And I like that about him. I think it's a cool personality trait. I think my personality is kind of the opposite. They're like, why is that guy here? Who is he? What is going on? But with that being said, before we get to the episode, of course, thank you to our patrons for their weekly contributions to making the episode possible. I appreciate it. And let's all welcome our new patron, Caleb. Thank you so much for signing up. Thanks for joining. Thanks for contributing on a weekly basis. We appreciate it dearly. I hope you enjoy episode 67 of Don't Shit on the Bus. Take it away, Bing. I'll see you next week. Hey, Bing. How's it going, man?
Very well, sir. How are you?
Good. I am excited to have you on the podcast today. And, you know, for those of you who aren't watching on video, Bing is in a bed.
Yeah, I'm very comfy.
Welcome to LA. And, you know, before you got on, Connor was making like the Zencastr recording. He's like, is his real name Bing? And your name is Bing, right?
Yeah. Well, so it's the first part of my last name. My name is Ryan Bingham.
Okay. There we go.
When I was in the fourth grade, there were four other Ryans, five total, in my fourth grade class. So the teacher just called us by our last names, and that just never stopped. And then I got older and it just got easier to shorten it to Bing other than Bingham, because it was just easier to say in conversations when I was like introducing myself to people, and it just stuck.
Yeah. And I think that name fits you. I don't know how to put that into words, but the name embodies you, or you embody the name. It's both or one or the other. I don't know, but it works.
So it's definitely become, it's weird when people call me by my first name. Like someone accidentally did it the other day and I was like, what? Who are you talking to? It's very odd sometimes.
Do you even know me?
Yeah. Sometimes I'll be out because like my mom or like my Nana called me by my first, my sister and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But like no one else in my life. So I'll like hear it sometimes and be like, what? What? Who's here?
I love that. Yeah. We had like other people on here named Moose or something. And Connor's like, is this Moose? Is it just like, it's like a made up name? I was like, no, it's his name, but it's his last name.
I mean, that's one thing that's great about touring people that you know just as well as I do is some of them have real great nicknames.
Oh, yeah.
Cowboy, Bagel, French Fry.
Wow, you just ripped them.
I knew a dude named Delicious one time.
I remember Delicious. Is he from
great
Chicago?
Merch dude. He's a great dude.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Just wild nicknames.
I have a friend in, his name's Jeremy Burke, and I won't say his tour name on here because it embarrasses him, but I was so used to calling him his tour name that when he switched careers into booking comedy shows in LA, I would show up and call him his name. He's like, Adam, you can't call me that anymore. I was like, I'm sorry. It just sticks in my, it'd be like if you wanted me to start calling you Ryan. I'd be like, no.
Yeah, it would
bad.
Be very odd.
Oh man. I do like though the kind of idea when, I don't know about you, but when I see these people that I used to tour with, they usually still let me call them their tour name. And it's kind of like, it's not an inside joke, but it's nice to be have like this like callback.
Being in like a cool guy club kind of.
Yeah.
You have a secret unspoken little thing that you can share. Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, cool. Well, I'm so happy to have you on the podcast today. I will do an intro before this goes, so we don't need to really explain too much on who you are in that regard. But, you know, I like to start with how I know the guest. And I usually go back to my farthest back memory. And I actually have talked about you before on the podcast. I forget who I had on. But I remember when you came, I was with the Day to Remember, and you just showed up on tour. Mm-hmm. Kind of. You like showed up on pre-production of tour. And then I was with the band at the time. And we didn't know, but then you were just on the tour. And we're like, oh, I guess he's here. He's here now.
Yeah.
And it was great because you're a good vibe. But what was your journey before I met you then? I think that was like 2013, right?
Yeah. That was the house party tour in 2013.
Okay. Before that point in your career, you obviously did other things to get there. What was your...
So much.
Yeah.
I started touring in high school when I was 15. Just with like local bands and stuff. I have a single mom who's just like really cool.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Who just like let me go. And I started touring with like clothing companies. My first tour was Warped Tour in 2004. And I worked for clothing company just selling, you know, the style of shirts that were popular back then. Like a blue shirt with like a huge yellow bird and like cartoons. So it was cool. It's called Naive Clothing. They're not around anymore. But that's how I started. And I actually thought I was going to be the next Kevin Smith. Like I wanted to make like indie movies and stuff like that. I went to specialty TV production classes in high school and stuff like that. Like touring was just something I kind of did for fun because I liked music. Like, you know, in breaks at school and stuff like that.
That's awesome. I can't believe you're on Warped Tour at 15.
Yeah, it was pretty weird.
I never knew that about you. That's amazing. Well done, dude.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. And then I just sort of transitioned into working with bands because I was basically like an assistant or an intern to this dude who was local in Orlando, Florida, where I'm from. Who was like helping me. I like worked for his like production company, but he also worked for like a local label that signed a bunch of bands and stuff like that who were going out on tour. And they were sending me out to do like early days, like YouTube video blogs. So I would like film all day and edit all night to like put up these like Warped Tour video blogs, like on tour and stuff. But because I had toured before, and sold merch with the clothing company, I was like, I can also do that for you if you want.
Oh, nice.
Like, I know how to do that. And then it just stuck.
Wait, how old were you then? Were you like, were you 16 or what? You know what I mean? Was this?
Or yeah, 16, 17. At 18, damn. I moved to New York and I went to film school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I hated it. I quickly realized how the school that I went to just was letting people in who could afford the tuition, and they didn't really care about like fostering talent or like helping people succeed. They just wanted to get your tuition. So I was only there for like a year, and then I quit right around like May of 2008. And then I just didn't know what else to do. I'd moved back to Florida, so I just hopped on Warped Tour again, and then it just kind of never stopped.
Who are you on Warped Tour with when you hop back on?
In 2008, I was with a pop band called Between the Trees.
Oh yeah, I remember Between the Trees.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
They did pretty good. They signed to, you know, a major label and stuff like that. And they were pretty successful. They didn't really go too far. They ended in like 2010, I think.
Yeah.
2009. But yeah, that's how I got my start was through them. I toured with them more than almost anybody. And then it was just a series of tours and, you know, working for anybody that I could, selling merch, running VIP events once those started becoming like a thing in the touring world and stuff like that. There's a really awesome dude who works for Atlantic Records, who lived in Orlando at the time that I was friends with just by being like someone in the local scene or whatever. And so I would go over to his house and hang out and stuff like that. And I was talking to him about how I was frustrated that I wasn't able to find a gig on the road. This is like the end of 2012. And I was like really frustrated with not being able to find a job. And I was talking to him at his house about it. And he's like, well, I know this guy who runs a management company in Orlando, his name's Mark, yeah. who's down my block, you should give him a call and see if they have anything. Like, even if it's not a paid gig, you could intern and at least be getting music work. You'll be working in the music industry. Like, I had, you know, I worked at bars and I valeted cars at hotels and I was like a bellman at hotels and stuff like that, like my at home jobs, and I wasn't on tour. I had like a pretty good setup with some like local businesses that when I would be home, they gave me shifts. And when I was gone, they didn't.
That's a dream setup.
Literally a dream setup. It like couldn't have been any cooler.
So really quick, I do want to hear more, but I wanted to ask, like, for people listening who maybe are looking for something similar, like a job, is that unique to your bosses, or was that unique to the kind of job you're working? Was that something that was viable at bars? Do you know what I mean?
I think it's a little bit of both, to be honest with you. I did have really cool bosses who were like, you're going on tour with like rock and roll bands? Like, that's amazing. So
let's
like
fucking go.
They were like very hyped about like the like who I was going out with and stuff like that. And then at the same time, I think like gig work like that, that is like kind of easy to slip in and out of, that doesn't require a whole lot of like training or brain power.
I know what you mean.
Can very easily become those jobs for people. Valets, waiters, well, you know, that kind of stuff, where it's not like, you know, you have to like prepare a presentation or spreadsheets and like be responsible for stuff. You just have to show up.
Yeah. We just need you to do the thing right.
Right. Just show up, park the car, bring the car back. That's all you have to do. Show up, bring the bags up to the hotel room, bring the empty cart down. Like, those kinds of jobs lend themselves very easily to that kind of stuff.
I will just say, Bing sounds like a great name for somebody who does those things. And I don't know why. It just like...
I had to fight so hard at some of those jobs to get them to not make my name tag be Ryan. It's so... like, I was so... Some of them I was like, that's a bummer.
It's memorable. Like, if I went somewhere and had like somebody take my car whose name was Bing, I would remember you after first meeting you. And next time I came, I'd be like, oh, Bing, let's fucking go.
Oh, dude. Also, I mean, you would not have recognized me at all. I mean, I had, for those who are not watching the video or what have you, like, I am I'm a pretty bald guy. Was not back then.
Respect.
Basically, all of the hair that is on my face from my beard was just on top of my head, and it was literally swapped. Because it was like a five diamond hotel, and I had to wear, you know, those like black sleeves that like basketball players wear to cover my tattoos. I had to keep there was no facial hair allowed. Like, it was like real swanky.
You had to
like
look the part.
Yeah. Which was the uncool part of it, but they paid really well when I was home.
Yeah, that's great. All right. I'm sorry I interrupted you a little bit there, but I had to reflect on that.
Yeah, for sure. I actually left out a little part where I actually lived in LA for a little bit
in casually?
The summer of 2012. Yeah, I worked at Side One Dummy Records.
I saw that on your LinkedIn.
Yeah, I worked there for a little bit as just an unpaid intern. Again, was very frustrated with not being able to find a job that summer. So I just emailed all the labels that I knew to see
all of
if
them?
I could, literally all of them. In fact, fun fact, your previous guest, my coworker, Melissa Hemingway, worked for Fueled by Ramen at around that time. She turned me down for an internship.
Wow. Shots fired.
In her defense, and she would, you know, she would probably want me to defend her. This is like, they were only accepting some places, especially when it's like, she was working at Fueled by Ramen, which is like owned by a giant company and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They have like a lot of requirements for internships and stuff. And at the time I was not in school, and that was a requirement for their internships, was like, you had to be getting college credit for it and stuff. Yeah. So I went with Side One because they didn't require any of that kind of stuff. But then after that, at the end of the year, I was meeting with my friend, and he told me to hit up Mark to just see if they had anything. I went in, I interviewed with men who would become my bosses, Mark and John.
What was that interview like?
It was intimidating. I wore a suit, and when I got there, they were like, "You didn't need to wear a suit. This is not that kind of place."
I'm just picturing, like, I know your bosses, I've worked with them, and I'm just picturing them sitting down, like, "Oh yeah, Ryan's on his way," and you show up. Like, was it like a black and white suit, or was it, you know? Okay,
oh,
that's sick. I love that.
They were like, When you come in next time, you don't have to wear that t-shirt and jeans is fun.
You're like, this is all I own. This is what I wear. Yeah. I will not intern here.
Yeah. So I just became an intern and I would go there. That was like a really crazy like scheduling time in my life. Like, I don't understand looking back how I did it.
Yeah.
There would be multiple days a week where I would wake up at 6 a.m., go to park cars at the hotel from 7 until 9 a.m. And then I would intern at Fly South from 9 until 3. And then I ended up going back to college and finishing my degree at a private university called Rollins College in Winter Park. And so I took classes from 4 until 9 at night.
Oh my God.
I worked at the bar from 10 until 2. I'm like, that was like Tuesdays and Thursdays, I think. If I tried to do that now, my brain would explode.
My body would explode.
Exactly.
That's so I was doing wild. That. Hey, respect.
Yeah. I was doing that. And I got an offer come summertime to do Warped again. So I told, my internship, like, hey, look, I love being here. I want to be here when I get back, but I'm going to go make money on tour and do this. So I went out on Warped 2013. I got home from that.
Who were you out with?
I worked for a band called Ann Arbor.
Oh, I love Ann Arbor. Dude.
Yeah, they're awesome. It was right. They were releasing the, like, I forget the name of the album. It's got like pictures on the front of it, like old timey kind of pictures. He Slade, the guy in who's like was Ann Arbor, at least at the time, had just released that album. It was so good. I loved working with that band.
Yeah, I'm looking at the name of their
albums.
They
were wild dudes. It was fun.
Burnout?
Yes.
Got it.
It's got so many good songs on it. That was a really fun summer. It was like one of the only times where I got that job through their manager who managed another one of the bands that I had worked for. It was like a new situation for me getting thrown into working for a band that I didn't know anybody.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
Which would prepare me for meeting you guys. Because as soon as I got home from that, I immediately went back to interning at Fly South. And then it was maybe like a week or two after I'd gotten back where they were talking. I just heard everyone in the office talking about how they needed a VIP person for the house party tour. And I immediately just like stuck my head in the door. I was like, I can do that. You could pay me cheap. Like, don't worry about it. Like, you know me, I'm not a creep. Like, I've been here for a while. Like,
I can exist on the road.
That is how that happened. John and Mark were just like, okay, you're just running the VIP thing, so just go.
You're like, really? I go? I'm and going?
I absolutely remember that first time because it was at the Orlando airport. We were all flying out of Orlando to go. I think that first day was in like Denver or something like that.
Yeah, we had rehearsals there.
Yeah, for like a week or something like that. At the venue. Yeah.
Keep building the house.
Yes. Keep building the house. Get good at building the house. I remember walking up to the gate and seeing everyone kind of sitting there. And the only person I had met at the time was the tour manager, Matt, at the time. So I went up and just started talking to him. And then everyone kind of like dispersed around the gate and like took seats and stuff. And so I just went over and sat down. I think it was next to Atkinson and Woodard.
Yeah,
I maybe remember Neil being in the section. I don't remember. There was like a good group of us like in a section. I sat down and it was like a couple of beats. And I'm like, I wouldn't describe myself as like a wallflower by any means. I feel like I'm pretty outgoing and I can like talk to people. But I do like to sit back and kind of observe my surroundings before I interact with them.
You're reading the room.
Yeah, exactly.
It's important.
So I was just kind of taking it in and kind of seeing what everyone's vibe was. And I remember, I can't remember who it was, but someone turned around and it was just like, hey, who are you? What are you doing here? Like, why are you sitting with us?
And I was like management didn't tell them or anything. It's so weird how that works out.
I don't remember. I mean, I'm sure they were just like, they knew that they had someone running VIP, but they didn't know it was me or something. I don't know. And I explained it and they're like, oh, right. Okay. And then it just kind of went from there. Like, everyone in that all of you guys were just instantly so cool and like just brought me in because you guys had all been touring together for a while at that point. Yeah,
if not touring together, just that run of shows for those like 3 or 4 years right there, it was just like constant.
Yeah, it just kind of went from there. After that tour was when my bosses told me that they liked me. The A Day to Remember guys told them how much they liked me and that they should hire me. And so they did. I got brought in like that right after that tour, like November 2013 or something like that is when I started getting a paycheck. And I've been here ever since. I just celebrated my 9th anniversary of working for the company the other week.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I've never worked anywhere for 9 years before.
That'd be weird if before being the age of 18, you had worked somewhere for 9 years. You know what I mean? I've been here since I was in 5th grade. It's kind of a big deal. What I was going to say is like, okay, so you're working at this management company interning. When you were interning there, was your goal like, I want to become a manager? Or was your goal more like anything they have, I'm just trying to like do more, move up, move forward?
It was more so that, the second one, to be honest with you. I, in retrospect, looking back at my life up until this point, like it has been a lot of like flying by the seat of my pants, not really having that much of a plan and just being like, that sounds fun and I can make money at it. So I'm going to go do that. I always thought, post not becoming a famous, indie film director.
I never knew that about you. I'm sorry I'm laughing, but it's just,
it's hilarious. Can you imagine if that would have happened, dude? I'm like living in Tribeca.
Still could.
Wearing like a beret and we could still make it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I, what a different dude would be sitting in this bed talking to you. I lost my train of thought though. What were we talking about?
I kind of asked you like what your goal was and you talking. Yeah.
Not really a goal. Post film school, it seemed like I just kept getting pulled back towards music. So I was like, I'll just lean into that. I don't know who said it, but there's a quote that I've always liked where it's like, just find something that you like to do and then figure out how to make money at it.
Yeah, that's a good quote.
Yeah, that's kind of what I ended up doing. And just kind of figuring it out. I did touring because the touring was what I knew.
Yeah.
So that is just what felt comfortable going back to immediately after leaving New York. And then it was just like being asked to do things and having to figure it out. And then that just becoming like, I never set out to be a VIP guy, but on a tour that I was selling merch for, they asked me like, hey, we're doing these like upgraded VIP things for like a group of small fans. We need someone to run it. Can you do that? And I was just like, I guess.
It's kind of the same vibe as like your old jobs. It's like, just show up and do the thing. That's all you got to do. Just do the thing.
Show up, do the thing. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then it just kind of like morphed. I kind of, when I was first starting at like interning places and stuff like that, I kind of thought that I wanted to be an A&R guy at a label. For people who, I guess, don't know, artist and repertoire is what it stands for. Some people say it stands for artist and restaurant.
I thought it was artist and relations.
It's not. That is a common misconception. It is not artist and relations. It's artist and repertoire.
I have no ego. I'm down to be wrong even a year into learning about the industry.
I was in a meeting when I was an intern with an A&R guy. He asked me what I thought. The only reason I know that is because this A&R guy, when I was an intern, asked me what A&R stood for. And I said, artist and relations. He goes, no.
You're like, I feel like I was set up right now. This was not nice.
I was absolutely set up for that. But it is ingrained in my brain. I thought I wanted to do that. They are the people at labels who connect a lot of the dots. They work with like producers and mixers, and like they work with the bands to like create music, and like they are often the one, people who are like signing bands and stuff like that. And I thought I wanted to do that, but through working with labels and management companies, both like as an intern working in the offices or as someone who is an employee of a client, like working for them, I kind of slowly saw like you could really do a lot of cool things and work on more cool things if you're a manager. And it wasn't an intentional thing. It's just through the path as it started, I started leaning more towards that. And like the road was going that way is I kind of, that dawned on me and I was like, oh, this seems way more fun and way cooler. Like the number of things that I've gotten to do just working for as a manager is like wild. Yeah. Just for a day to remember, like, you know, we got to do, we did like, I forget what tour it was. I think it was the Parks and Devastation tour. We did like a series of like really cool screen printed posters that were done by like different artists and stuff like that. And
you got to work with all the artists.
That was so cool. And we ended up getting to do one with the guy who did the album artwork for the Mark, Tom, and Travis show, the live Blink-182 album, which is like, I mean, I have a Blink-182 tattoo yeah. that I have with Neil. And like that kind of stuff, a really big, like full circle moments are like, it's so crazy sometimes. Like I remember going again with a lot of them have been with a day to remember, being with a day to remember on a video shoot. And the guy that was directing it, his name's Shane Drake. He's like, especially when we were younger, like, I mean, he's directed a bunch of Paramore videos, yeah. and The Rocket Summer and Panic. He directed the Panic at the Disco video, the one of him in like the carnival outfit.
The OG.
Chime In song. Yeah. I worshiped the dude, and he was directing this video, so I got to like
the end of me
around.
Video.
Yes,
if you want to look it up.
Yeah, it's a great video. And he remembered me because when I was in high school and going to film school, I would, like a dork, email him because I got his email off his website. I would email him questions like, dude, you did this really cool like technique in this video. How'd you do that? And he would respond. And I mean, never in a million years. It would only happen like maybe two or three times. But like,
yeah,
you know, over 10 years later, I'm on a video set and like introduce myself to the dude. And he was legit like, oh my God, you used to email me questions back in the day. And I was like, this is bonkers. You remember me? Like, yeah. you're the guy. It, like getting to do that kind of stuff and have those moments where like, my life comes full circle has been like the absolute most rewarding part of being a manager. Because like, if I wasn't working as a manager or in a management kind of company structure, you know, doing something for a lot of different types of bands, I'd never get to work on stuff like that or meet those yeah. kinds of people. Like it's the best part.
And I love how through everything you do, it's very evident that you're just a huge fan of music. And, you know, I've seen you side stage for the Wonder Years, and I know what excited Bing looks like.
I was wondering if you were going to bring that up. You guys gave me so much crap on that tour.
Who did?
The Day to Remember crew guys. Not because it was the Wonder Years or anything like that, because, like, you know, that's not really, I feel like it's a pretty unique thing, like, I am a huge fan of music. And I mean, even the bands that I work with now, like if I'm at a show, I'm screaming and like having a good time. And like,
you could put you in the audience and you blend right in. Actually, you would stand out.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
in a good way.
I think that is a rare thing for people who work in music, who go to concerts sometimes on a daily basis. Like it's yeah. easy to get jaded and just be like, and I'm guilty of that sometimes too, just being like, cool, we're at a show.
Yeah, you're working.
Yeah, it's the moments where it gets you, or like just like the breakdown hits in a certain way, or like the intro is like so cool.
Punch the person
like that.
Next
like,
to you.
It just grabs me, man. Still, yeah. It's like, it is still my favorite. My favorite part of the whole thing is going to shows. And that, like, did the first show back after all of this, it was like pretty emotional.
What'd you see? Who was it?
I went to go see Wage okay. tour. They had a tour that went out last fall, Beartooth. And that was my first show back. I think it was like 500 something days in between shows, which is like crazy for me. Like I've, you know, been going on and on this whole time, but like I've been going to shows since I was 15. Like
yeah.
There hasn't been like a month without a show for me, and I don't even since then until, you know, the world ended. So that first show back was just like, I can't believe how much I missed being in a room with 2,000 sweaty screaming people. Like if you had asked me the day before like, how excited are you, I'd have been like, yeah, I'm excited to like that we're getting our lives back and stuff. But in the next day at that show, being there, it's just like, oh, this is what it's about.
You probably felt alive again, alive for the first time in a long time.
It was like, it was so energizing. It was bonkers.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, yeah, I like how much of a fan you are, because I think it comes through as like, you know, some people might not be that way in at a concert setting, you know, there might be a manager and they're just sitting there and they, I feel like even if they're not showing it, they feel that way inside. Otherwise they wouldn't be where they are. And I like that you show it because it's how honest you are.
I think I've gotten some weird looks sometimes.
He's in charge of this artist?
Yeah. Yeah.
He does what?
Yeah. But, you know, I think that's an endearing quality of myself. And, you know, I like it. I'm having a
no,
good time.
No, I like it too. Yeah. I like it because, I mean, I like how much of a fan you are because I feel like that's why everybody does this in the first place. And if there's one thing that I would love for listeners to get from this podcast is that if you like music, there is an avenue for you in this industry, even if playing music isn't it.
So many. Like you could go to college for something so not music related and end up being in the music, I mean, you do everything, business affairs, accountants, lawyers, like you can, there, the music industry is so vast and so wide, but also such a small community that like it, there are jobs at labels and at companies that do anything in music that are so specific and strange where you're like, that's a gig that some, I guess someone has to do that, I guess. So like, yeah. Yeah, that's a job. Like, you can get it. You can get your foot in the door a lot of different ways. And the way that you get your foot in the door doesn't necessarily have to be right out of the gate, the thing that you do, you know?
Yeah. Like when you were doing VIP at Fly South, did you kind of make it known to them that your end goal was management? Or no, so how did you transfer from interning or working more of like day job-esque jobs under their umbrella into being, is partner the right word? I mean, you're a manager there now, you know,
you do.
So like, and it happened slow from the outside looking in, seamlessly. Like there was a point there where I was like, wait, you're a manager now?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Jordan, who used to sell merch for a data.
Yeah, we've had him on here.
Yeah. Jordan's great. He used to give me some crap because my email used to be intern2@flysouthmusic. So like,
that was an email address.
Oh yeah, I wasn't even the first intern. I was intern2.
Intern TOO.
Yeah, yeah. Also, I lost my train of thought again. What were we talking about?
I was talking about like how you went from kind of like day job esque at management to
So I was an intern, which is like doing a lot of the grunt work stuff, busy work stuff, filling out spreadsheets or like, you know, at the time I was doing, like I was posting a lot on Facebook for like targeted ad mats for like cities. Okay. Like if we had a band that was on tour, like I would go in and make posts, individualized posts for each city that were targeted only for like the region around that city.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And then when I got brought on as an actual employee and getting paid, I was still doing a lot of that kind of stuff because they were like figuring out what they wanted to do with me. They knew that they liked me and I was a hard worker and I got along well with bands. I knew how to talk to bands because I'd toured for so long. I can relate to them. I have a long touring history that can like be very relatable to them. I know what it's like to do 18 shows in a row.
You know, on every area of their job.
Right. So they were trying to figure out how they wanted to incorporate me into their structure. And then I was an assistant for, I don't even know how long, like a while, maybe not quite a year. I'm not sure, but I was an assistant, which is an amazing way for anyone listening to get your foot in the door, look for assistant jobs because you're basically a paid intern, kind of.
Yeah.
That's basically what an assistant is like, you know, it depends on the situation. You know, a lot of assistants have a lot of responsibility, not quite interns. So I'll walk that back a little bit. But, you know, that is where I learned a lot about like what managers do and the kinds of conversations that they have to have and like the people that they deal with at labels and agencies and that kind of stuff. Being an assistant and being right there. And what I enjoyed a lot about it was it got me in the room. Or it got me on the phone call. So, you know, I'm muted. I'm not listening or talking, or I'm not talking or, you know, chiming in because that's not my place.
Yeah.
But being able to listen, you know, I was saying before, like, I do kind of, I'm not a wallflower, but I do like to read the room and kind of understand my surroundings and stuff, and listening and hearing how people interact in certain situations and stuff like that. Like, being an assistant really gave you a crash course.
Going to school, kind of. You're getting trained 100%. Passively, almost.
That is what it was. It's a passive training. You have to be aware of it and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a big part of that, a lot of the people that become successful and work their ways up are people who do know how to do that. Like, keep your mouth shut, read the room, and understand when is the place to speak up. I mean, when you get asked, for sure, for your opinion,
yes.
Make sure that you give it, and, you know, you give it with conviction and stuff like that. But, you know, I've been told multiple times throughout my career from a myriad of people in different positions in the industry that that was a quality that they liked in me, that I know how to be in the room and not be a distraction, or not let the person who needs to lead the meeting, instead of, you know, a very wide range of different experiences. But you learn that being working that closely with someone every single day and being on all of their calls and all of their meetings and stuff like that, you get the crash course pretty quick.
And it's, you know, and I've experienced this, you know, attribute of yours, because I was touring and you entered that group and you came into a close-knit group of people and kind of seamlessly and effortlessly assimilated into the social group. And you didn't come in hot, or you didn't come, I mean, you were still yourself, but, you know, you kind of found your way in. And I mean, really, we talk about that so much, reading the room, you know, networking, just these social skills that are viable in the industry. At what point did you identify within yourself that, hey, these skills that exist within me naturally, or that I am able to learn easily, would make me a good manager? And, you know, what did that, like, basically, I want to paint a picture for somebody who maybe isn't a manager yet or doesn't know that they want to be one, what they might see in themselves that would put them in that path or that trajectory, mm-hmm. for a career. Is there, what stuck out to you about yourself?
I mean, at the time when I was like first getting into it, I mean, I didn't know, you know, I'm a big believer in like, imposter syndrome is so real.
Yeah.
And it happens to literally everyone. If you think you're alone and feeling like you don't know what you're doing in your job or your hobby or what have you, like,
we're just making it up.
Everyone is just trying to figure it out. So I didn't really recognize stuff back then. I mean, I think now it's the stuff that we've been talking about. It's knowing how to read the room. I just know like a better way to say it. Just like, that has gotten me. I mean, I'll just got another a day to remember example, just because.
Yeah, I love the examples. Like, I love the stories. Like, bring them out, dude. I'm ready.
I remember specifically on the house party tour, the first tour I did with everyone. It was early on, and I have some close friends in common with the A Day to Remember guys because we're all from Florida.
Okay.
So I knew like a little bit about like everyone's personalities and stuff like that. And I was a pretty big fan as well. Like, I remember skipping senior year of high school and going to get tacos with my buddy, and he put on Fast Forward to 2012.
Oh,
and I was like,
yeah.
What is this? What is
we must be the same age.
I'm 33.
Yeah, I am too.
88. What's up?
Well, actually I lied. I'm 32, but I turned 33 this year.
Yeah, I was in December, but it was like early on in the tour, and you know, I didn't want to overstep my bounds. I was the new guy. Like, I just wanted to go out there, do the gig, have a good time, come back and see what happens. Maybe I get to tour with A Day to Remember again. And I remember I was packing up the VIP area, which on that tour, like, included like an acoustic performance and a Q&A and stuff. And there was a PA and all that kind of stuff I had to set up. So I was packing all that stuff down to go back into the truck at the end of the night. And like, you know, one of the other bands that was on the tour was playing, and Neil walked into the like VIP area. I was like, hey, what's up, man? How you doing? Just packing up, like listening to music and stuff. And we like started talking like kind of very surface, you know, level, like, how's the day? Like, blah, blah, blah. And then I remember like there was a pause, and he looked at me and he goes, you know that we like you, right? Like, you can come and hang out with us. And I was like, okay, yeah, awesome. And like, I feel like my reading the room and kind of staying in the back and kind of observing stuff can be a little bit of a detriment sometimes, you know, in that situation. Like, I was kind of staying away because I didn't know anybody really. I wasn't like, the people I was the closest with on that tour were not in the band or crew that I was working with. Like, I knew all the Wonder Years guys because we had done Warped Tour with each other a couple of times. A good friend of mine worked in their crew and stuff like that. Like,
yeah.
So I was like going to hang out with like the other bands a little bit more than I was with them, but it's because, you know, I was still trying to like read the room. And then I got the go ahead, and you know, it's those kinds of interactions that I think are the qualities that like make me a good manager. Like, being able to be, I'll say this, and I've said this a few different times to a lot of people over the years, I think one of the biggest things in the industry, whether it's touring or in the business side, working at labels or agencies and stuff, be a good hang. That is the number one thing. Don't be a punisher. Don't be a jerk. Like, just be a good hang. Be a joyful, like, enjoyable person to be around, and that will get you in the door more than a lot of other stuff. Like, a lot of the jobs that I got, especially like touring wise, that industry is very word of mouth. So like, if you're trying to do that, being a good hang is, I think, the number one biggest thing on tour. Like, if you are not, if I got a call from someone saying like, if we're looking for whatever, a guitar tech or something like that, it's like, okay, I found this guy, he's got a great resume, he's worked for big bands and stuff like that, I call his references, or if I call someone who knows him, yeah, I know that knows him or her or whatever, what kind of, like, are they a good roommate? Like, that's what's unique about tour jobs and stuff, right? Because like, you not only have to be good at your job, but you also have to be a good roommate, because you're living in a turtle shell with 11 other people. Like, you have to be a good hang. It is an absolute requirement of the industry job. It's crazy, but it is.
And if you can't be a good hang, just get a camera. I'm just kidding.
Oh, stop it. You're one of the best hangs.
No,
you're
I'm just giving a hard time. I'm just saying, like, photographers are a different breed. Get a camera and shut up and sit in the corner. No, I'm just kidding. Hanging is definitely, you know, everybody hangs differently. And yeah, I think that what a good hang looks like depends on your job, your personality. It's not saying be the same as everybody else. It's just saying,
no.
I think people just recognize, like, just be real, be you. And sometimes it meshes with people. Sometimes that doesn't. And if it doesn't always mean you're a bad hang. It just means it's not a good fit. Find another band. Find another artist.
I mean, I've worked, you know, in the touring side, worked with bands who it was, you know, we didn't vibrate on the same wavelength, you know, like, we, you know, there's just those people out there, you know what I mean? Sometimes you're, like you said, it's just not a good fit.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. It'd be so funny. Like, I was just thinking of somebody who didn't read the room or was new to the music industry. Your statement would have sounded more like, yeah, and there's people I didn't vibe with. They are. And you would have just started listing it and you'd be like, wait a second, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah. That's a great example.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't do that.
Oh man. No, I love hearing the stories that stick out to people like you, and talking about Neil, and people who have listened to this podcast are familiar with Neil and his personality. And I can picture him saying that to you in his words and his tone. Yeah.
He's done a lot for me, not just like, you know, helping me get my foot in the door with places, but he gasses people up. Like, he's an amazing human being who just like cares about people. It's great. I'll just tell another story. You know, the pandemic obviously was like very hard for people all over the world in every industry. I think, you know, maybe I'm a little bit biased, but the music industry was hit one of the hardest, especially the touring industry.
Touring and
Broadway and like, you know, at the beginning, like a lot of like filmed entertainment stuff was the only thing that was like, boom, done. There's
non-essential things that exist for entertainment just drop.
Absolutely, absolutely gone. You know, so, and that was hard for a lot of people and stuff like that. I was very lucky in that I knew, you know, people locally where I lived who I could like, you know, pick up some shifts on the weekends and like that to like make a little extra side money when things were tight. And Neil was one of those people. I mean, I worked at Winter Park Biscuit Company for a number of months during the pandemic. Just
that's sick. Great. I didn't know that. Damn, I would have gone just for you.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That is cool.
It was so fun because I just got to work with my friends. Like Neil was there most of the time that I was working and stuff. So it was like, it didn't really feel like work, even though I was like, you know, packing up chicken sandwiches, vegan chicken sandwiches.
They're not real chicken, guys. It's vegan food.
Vegan.
Yes.
In fact, we were told, I'm pretty sure we were supposed to say plant-based because vegan can be confusing to some people. They don't really understand.
Hey, that's
it's all
fair.
Plant-based.
Now
plant-based.
You know.
We're plant-based
and artist and repertoire.
Yeah, there you go. I'm also giving grammar and vocabulary lessons.
Yes. That was called a callback. I say that now because I've heard it in so many things where people say that's a callback. And now I just say it as a call. Yeah, just say it as like, I don't know even how to explain what I'm doing. It's probably less funny if I explain it or more ridiculous.
Made me laugh. I like it.
Yeah. Hey, man. If you're not watching the video, I would encourage you to because Bing has... You remind me of my best friend, Craig, who also listens to podcasts. What up, Craig? Everything's more fun if you can find yourself somebody like Bing or Craig to watch movies with. Everything's funnier and more memorable because you guys have those like laughs that are contagious, borderline offensive, and just so good. You know what I mean? You're doing it now. It's a good laugh. I don't really mean they're offensive. I was just trying to get a laugh. I was just trying to get a laugh out of you.
That was good. Offensive is very funny. Offensive laugh. I appreciate that. I mean, I think that's part of being a good hang, right? You know, it's like
you brought it back around, man.
Just being, being a. Again, you said it. After I said what I said about being a good hang, etc. But you know, it's like. It's not about conforming and just being like everyone else and like just going with, but it's about like going with the flow and just being real. Like I can't imagine trying to like stifle myself to be in a situation and stuff like that. Like you said, like sometimes situations, you're just not in the right situation. You're not with people that are on your wavelength. Sometimes sometimes that happens. Sometimes you can transition people over, you know, into being on your team. But just being yourself, I think is the most important thing that you can do because people know when you're not being real, when you're trying to put a mask on and stuff.
So what does being yourself look like in this day and age for you? And I don't mean that in like a personal level. I mean it professionally, like you're a manager now. Do you mind listing or sharing with us who you manage? And then in addition to that, kind of what your day-to-day life is like? Like what, like, I know you made the joke artists and restaurants, and that's because, you know, I'm sure your life is a lot of meeting up with, and that's A&R, but I'm sure your life is a lot of restaurants with bands and a lot of shows, but can you just explain what your job's like?
Yeah, sure. I work for Fly South Music Group. I manage Wage War, Magnolia Park, World's First Cinema are like my big ones. And then I help out with like a lot of the other clients that we have just kind of on like smaller bases and stuff like that. You know, I work with the Ghost Inside and you know, the other clients that we have, I work with.
You guys all help out to the Fly South Music Group, but you have your own things you're kind of in charge of.
Right. Exactly. I have like the things that I'm like steering the ship kind of on. And then there's the stuff that I kind of do more day to day help out kind of stuff with on a daily basis. I mean, one of my favorite things about what I do is that it's never the same. There are always a lot of phone calls and emails and text messages and like conversations to have and stuff, but they're always about different stuff. Like it's never about the same thing 2 days in a row, unless something like bad is going on and it's like a continuing issue that we have to talk about. But like
a tour is getting canceled because of a pandemic and you have to reschedule it.
Yeah, that's a good example. You know, like yesterday I was on the phone with an agent talking about, you know, routing and planning a tour, but I also had a meeting about like working with a nonprofit like that works with like mental health and stuff. And then I had a couple conversations about like artwork that we were working on for a tour poster and the VIP laminates. And I had a conversation with radio people about doing like an acoustic event. Like it's just all so different. It ranges so far. Like, yeah, you could be having like, you know, a conversation with a lawyer about, you know, the fine print in a deal. And then the next minute you're having like, you know, a crazy conversation about like, what if we added more trash cans being thrown into the audience in the artwork? Like, it's just like wild.
You're like, this is why. Yeah, that does sound, it's very vast. Have you ever contemplated wearing a suit to a show that you show up for like Wage War, just wearing a suit? Just like, I feel like that would really mess with them.
Mighty Mighty Boss Tones or something, like just going to a ska show.
Yeah. Is that Bing skanking right now? You're like, yes, that is him.
Oh,
are you good skanker?
Flashback to like 15, 16 year old me, you would find me in the circle pit skanking up a storm to like Less Than Jake. And there was a local ska band in Florida called the Spit Valves that I was like a huge fan of.
Mine was I Voted for Kodos. I just want to share that. That was our local ska band.
I have never heard of that, but that is an amazing, any band that takes their name from The Simpsons, automatically.
I love that you got it right away, too.
Of course. Kang and Kodos, bro.
Man, what was the name of your local one? Because I kind of got so excited you were sharing it, I shared over you.
The Spit Valves.
That's pretty wild, too. The Spit Valves. Yeah, man, ska needs to come back, I think.
Well, the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones just broke up, so I don't know if that's an indication of ska actually being dead this time, but maybe we'll get a sixth wave.
Oh, man. Well, yeah. Dude, I like talking to you because I feel like we grew up, although we grew up in different states, we grew up in similar worlds. You know, we grew up far away distance-wise, but really close.
I mean, literally couldn't be farther away, right? You know, I grew up in Florida. You're from San Diego, right?
No, I'm from Wisconsin.
Oh, what? I didn't know
that. Isn't
that
weird? But I am.
I thought you were a San Diegan.
I mean, when we met, I lived in San Diego. I moved there when I was 19. So, you know, I moved. So I was in San Diego for 10 years. So that 11-ish years now.
That counts for you to be able to change.
I agree. I'm from San Diego. It's weird though, man. It's weird saying you're from somewhere. I still identify really heavily. Actually, when you said you worked for Between the Trees, I specifically remember. Did they tour with Barcelona or no?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Well, they toured so much with so many. I mean, like Amberlin and the Rocket Summer and the Dangerous Summer and like just so many bands.
I remember them playing in Madison. So I like looked it up, try to find it.
Oh, yeah. And I'm like, we played Madison a lot.
Yeah, dude, at the Majest. I remembered it. I remember seeing it on the flyer and everything and emailing to try to do a photo pass for the show, but I never got it. But I should have hit you up. That's where I messed up.
You should have.
Oh, man. I'm looking through my emails to see if I like wrote the email at some point.
That's so funny. Sometimes I love going back and looking up like, oh, man, I talked to this person when I was like 15 and asked them like a really lame question. Like the video guy, like.
Do you save all your emails?
I try to, at least the ones that I know that are like important, you know what I mean? Like Google has like a limit. So like you can reach all of your entire email being too full, which has happened to me a couple of times.
Oh, I'm sure with a manner, you probably reach my minute limit every year.
In fact, I just did my yearly cleaning where I like get rid of a lot of the emails in my folders that are like 2 years old that aren't something that I need to keep or hold on to. It's like a flight for someone that I booked 2 years ago. Like I can get rid of that.
That's what you think.
I don't. Yeah, right. It comes back around. It always does.
What's your email count? Let's do monthly. What do you think your email count is monthly?
I honestly don't. I have no idea. Definitely hundreds, thousands. Hundreds. I think hundreds would be like a conservative estimate. Thousands seems like pretty high, but maybe. I guess it depends. It depends on what's going on. Like, you know,
yeah.
the end of last year to now, like, I don't know, maybe hundreds, maybe thousands. I feel like I've been doing a lot of emails, but like, you know, when things were not going on, like, not a dud.
I can't imagine working in this industry before emails. Can you? It's just like crazy to me.
I think about it all the time. I mean, I started touring so early that I still remember when we had to print out MapQuest directions.
I remember that
we
too.
We had a three ring binder that felt like it was the size of like an encyclopedia, printed out the whole tour, printed out MapQuest directions. So we could just rip them out when we were done and we could just keep going.
I have an early tour story. Keep going. I was going to ask you, I want to hear more early tour stories. Keep going.
I remember I was with Between the Trees, and I remember the day we decided to go to Best Buy and buy like a Garmin GPS. Like, it was like a new thing to have like a GPS thing that you could put in your car, and like you didn't need to print out directions.
You had to plug it in.
Have a map. Like, I remember having maps. We used to have to sit, if you were sitting in the front seat with the driver of the van, you had the map.
You're a map dude.
Which is why I never want, like, sitting in the front was like good because you could be comfortable and you weren't around like eight other people in the back of the van, but you had to be in charge of the map, and that stressed me out, and I did not want that responsibility.
Oh man.
At 15.
Do you have any other like early touring stories, I guess you'd say, that are like, I don't know, anything that you're like, touring back then was a lot different.
Oh my gosh, so different. I think what's fun about what was touring back then was like, there was like weird obstacles like that, like having to have a binder of directions printed out from Ask Jeeves or whatever, MapQuest. Google Maps didn't even exist at the time. I don't know, so many things about back then, dude. Like, I remember it was Warped Tour 2007, and we had an off day in Pomona, and I waited in line at the AT&T store to get the first iPhone. Like, I remember I was like... the new popular girl at high school the next day at Warped Tour, because everyone found out that I bought the iPhone the day before, and they were all like, can I see it? Like, oh my gosh, look at that thing.
You could touch it? You could touch the screen?
Yeah. Yeah, dude.
It doesn't seem like that long ago.
It does not, but it was quite a long time ago. Over a decade.
Get a Sidekick.
Almost two decades ago.
Came out in 2000, what? Six. Seven. Yeah, I was a senior in high school. While you're saying old touring stories, I was thinking like back when I was in a van, one of the funniest things to me was I had this battery for my flash that would power it. It had a power outlet in it that you could plug in, you know, whatever. And having portable power was a thing back then. It was a big lithium battery. And before my photo shoots, at the time I was touring with Four Letter Lie, which is Kevin's old band from A Day to Remember. The singer would always plug his hair straightener into my battery before our photo shoots to charge to straighten his hair when we'd hop out of the van and do a photo shoot. And I'm going to send you this video to watch after. I hope it shows up, actually. Oh yeah, I'm going to have to send it to you. But it's really funny.
Amazing. Hair straighteners were a big part of touring back then.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's wild. All right. Well, I mean, do you have, I like ending on those stories. It's nice knowing where you came from, what you did, what you're doing now, because up until then, my fondest memories with you are like, I'm like, oh yeah, Bing, he did VIP, we hung out a bunch, we played Frisbee.
Oh dude, that was, I remember that. Dude, oh, that was such a big part of our touring life for so long.
What was your Frisbee was like, name?
Fun. Oh man, I think it was just Frisbing.
Frisbing, I think that sounds right.
Frisbing, I'm pretty sure that's what it was. Dude,
that's a good name.
Remember we used to like, remember when we were in North Carolina that one time and we like
at the hotel
went out and we just went out downtown. We were just throwing frisbees throughout downtown, like somewhere in North Carolina. It was so weird.
Yeah, I got that. That was fun.
We would get to a hotel, all change into like athletic like shorts and shirts, and like go out to play frisbee in a city, like urban frisbee.
We got good. We got good at playing frisbee. I don't know about you, but I sucked at Frisbee before then. And it was like one of the first times in my life where I was like, oh yeah, you can learn things, Adam. It's not, you're not just a stagnant like vessel. Like you can acquire more abilities in life. And Frisbee is one of them. Oh man. Well, yeah, that was good times. I know you're in LA right now. When are you here till Saturday?
Yeah, I leave on Saturday.
All right, I'll text you after this to see if our schedules work out and maybe we can grab a meal or a coffee or something. It's kind of wild. We're not far from each other right now.
I know. So it's pretty random, but yeah. Yeah, man, just let me know.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks for coming on the podcast. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And last question before you go is actually, did you wear shower shoes or not on tour? What's your vibe?
It depends on the tour and what kinds of venues that you're touring in my opinion.
Warped Tour, a safe way to do it.
Warped Tour, absolutely wear shower shoes. There are hundreds of people. Well, I mean, Warped Tour is not a thing anymore, but it's like you're at summer camp. You know what I mean? There's hundreds of people using those showers.
Happening.
But if you're at like House of Blues, if you're at like a House of Blues and your green room has a shower, like, I mean, you know, I feel like that's okay.
Yeah, yeah. That's like a home shower. It's not like a public shower.
Definitely don't poop on the bus.
No pooping on the bus. Well, thank you so much, Bing. I will catch you around. I appreciate your time here. And with that being said, take it away, Kevin.